We are always honored when Dr. Herbert Woodward Martin comes to visit. He is professor emeritus at the University of Dayton, where he taught literature and creative writing for more than 3 decades, as well as being poet in residence. He has long been connected with the work of Paul Laurence Dunbar, the 19th century African-American poet and novelist, both in editing Dunbar's work and performing his work. Dr. Martin has written 9 volumes of his own poetry, including the recently published On the Flyleaf, and has acted as librettist for a number of American composers. I am delighted to share that he has a new book of poetry titled The Shape of Regret, and I'm further happy to tell you that 2 of the poems have already received awards. Dr. Martin, welcome back to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here, and thank you for inviting me.
So, The Shape of Regret, I must say, the title immediately piques my curiosity. There's something about the word regret that makes me want to know more. So, let me ask you how regret inspires your poetry, how it came to be the title of this work.
Well, first of all, the manuscript had a different title. And secondly, the editors at the press said, could you change it because there are a number of problems? And I said to myself, fine, I will do that. And I thought about it and I thought, as you look back over your life, you want to say, well, I did this, and I have no regrets, and I won't go back and change anything because it won't do any good anyway. And so I thought, why not The Shape of Regret? And each time I look at it, I think it gives me something more rather than less. And so I'm pleased with the title.
And there is, in fact, a poem titled Regret.
Yes.
Share that with us now, if you would.
Regret for Charlotte. My great aunt told this story with these words. By the time I knew her, Mary Bell was a fully grown woman, and she was filled with regret of human misery. She had begun her life by rejecting all of her previous suitors who came asking for her hand in matrimony. One of those men that she had rejected chose to stand at her door patiently, and after many years of lonely sorrow, she relented. Her womb produced 3 daughters, while she sustained her husband's many rebukes. She was mired down in regret, so much so that she told me if she had the opportunity, she would reverse time, put her right foot on the brakes of her marriage, and bring all of its activities to a screeching halt. Back up, completely out of her wedding dress, and step into that time which promised to give her all sorts of possibilities and introduce her again to her womanly innocence. Could she reverse destiny's road with such a simple gesture? Was it possible to say no to the rabbi and flee the synagogue with the pulse of life still beating in her small hands? Would God still support her actions? Or would he find her responsible and find some unsuspecting loophole and dole in a righteous punishment for disobedience? I don't know what rightly happened to that young lady, but I am guessing she either backed up out of that wedding dress or she died. Either way, she is no longer suffering the way I see it.
Thank you. Part of the beauty in this poem to me is that it's very accessible. It's a story in general mm-hmm. that many of us can relate to.
Sure.
But at the end, there's a twist, which is the perspective of the narrator in this poem. Would you say a bit about what a turn is in poetry? And understand it's called a volta also.
Yes.
You have a little story about John Chiaretti.
Well, my teacher said the poem ought to offer you an opening. You ought to give a surprise at the end. And so I'm thinking this surprise is you tell this story. And does she live through it or doesn't she? And so I think at the end, that little turn is the hook that pulls you just slightly beyond the poem and makes you take another avenue to go a different route. And so that's what I'm aiming for in the poem. It's something that my teachers suggested, and that would be a way to end the poem. Because you're always thinking, how does the poem end? How do you end the poem? You're also thinking about how do you start the poem as well. The middle part is pretty well written, but those two things, beginning and end, are difficult. And so you have to try to figure that out for yourself.
I do remember the first poem that I heard. So this was at my mother's knee, and it was When the Frost Was on the Pumpkin. Mm. And it was Pumpkin. It wasn't Pumpkin. Yeah. By James Whitcomb Riley. Yeah. Memorable, I suspect, because it was in part written in that Southern Indiana colloquial speech. Do you remember the first poem in your life?
I remember that when I first began to write poems, they were very, very structured, and they had ABAB rhyme at the end. And then I discovered Whitman, and he put all the rhymes internally in the poem, and I sort of followed that one way or another. But this morning, as I was practicing, I thought, boy, there's a lot of rhymes that are internal in this poem, and I've given over to that rather than putting it at the end. So I can't explain to you why I decided this one rather than that one, but that's the way they've worked out so far.
So I do want you to read a poem after Lucille Clifton, because she's certainly one of my favorites, and I think perhaps yours. Did you know Lucille Clifton? Do you count her a teacher?
I knew her, and we were on a panel together, and we sat next to each other autographing books, and I had a chance to sort of inquire as to how she worked, what she did, what the language was that she used, why she pursued one route rather than another. And so that for me was a kind of a revelation, shall we say, an opening. And so when I got back home, I tried a number of poems, I thought, in the way that she might approach writing a poem.
And this particular poem, was it inspired by an actual experience in your life, or is it Lucille Clifton's experience of her that inspired it?
I thought it was more of a poem following how she would deal with this particular subject, what the language would be, what the tone of voice would be. And so I wrote these three poems sort of using her voice and perhaps borrowing her technique as well. Three poems after Lucille Clifton. At the drop of a hat, stop and ask for directions. My reticent family pretends to be too shy to ask, too embarrassed to inquire. I forge ahead because I know that there are dangers up ahead that veer into nothing. I also know that there are strangers up ahead who possess answers. Once we were lost in Western Hungary, in the deepest and darkest kind of loneliness, and a hand knocked on the window of our car and pointed to the map on my wife's lap. His fingers traced the way, all the way from his city to our city, while our eyes followed faithfully. I have always been grateful for the knowledge others have in their possession.
Thank you. We often hear about these polarized times we live in, and this poem to me offers such a gift because we can hold it in our hands, we can hold it in our hearts, and have that sense of shared community, of our shared humanity. And I thank you for the poem. I thank you for The Shape of Regret and for visiting with us tonight, Dr. Martin.
Well, I thank you for inviting me, and it has been a pleasure to come and share these poems, and I hope your listeners enjoy them.
I've been talking with Dr. Herbert Woodward Martin about his latest book of poetry titled The Shape of Regret, about which you'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.